They were on text 29, page 39 in this volume, chapter 14, or 13 rather, Dhritarashtra quits home. 1329. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshwa Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. So text 29. Let's read the synonyms first. Evam, thus, Raja, King Dhritarashtra, Vidurena Anujena, by his younger brother Vidura. Actually, let's read together, shall we? Pragya, introspective in knowledge, Chakshur, eyes, Bodhitaha, being understood, Ajamidaha, Dhritarashtra, son of the family of Ajamida, Chidva, by breaking, Sueshu, regarding kinsmen, Sneha Pashyan, the strong network of affection, Dradhimna, because of steadfastness, Nishchakrama, got out, Bratri, by his brother, Sandarshita, direction to, Advha, the path of liberation. So, of course, this verse follows the very brutal discussion between Vidura and Dhritarashtra, and in which Vidura confronted him. So, he spoke very harshly. You're living like a dog in the palace of Yudhisthira. You're living at the mercy of those you tried to kill. You're living at the mercy of those who killed your 100 sons, and your body is just failing. What are you doing? So this is Dhritarashtra's reaction. Evam Raja Vidurena Nujena. Pragya Chaksur Bodhita Ajamidha. Chitva Sveshu Sneha Pashandradhimno. Nischa krama bratri sandarshita dva. Evam raja vidura nena nujena. Pragya chaksur bodhita ajamidaha. Chitva sveshu sneha paschandradhimno. Nischa krama bratri sandarshita dva. Who would like to chant? Nischa krama bhaktri sandarshita dva.
Sveshu Sneha Pasandra Himno. Nishka Brahma Bratri Sandarshita Dva. Evam Raja Vidure Nanu Ninja. Pragya Chakshur Bodhita Ajamidham.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thus Maharaj Dhritarashtra, the scion of the family of Ajamidha, firmly convinced by introspective knowledge, pragya, broke at once the strong network of familial affection by his resolute determination. Thus he immediately left home to set out on the path of liberation as directed by his younger brother, Vidura. Who would like to read the purport? Somebody with a microphone? Could you start? Vijamani?
Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the great preacher of the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam, has stressed the importance of association with sadhus, pure devotees of the Lord. He said that even by a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can achieve all perfection. We are not ashamed to admit that this fact was experienced in our practical life. We were not favored by His divine grace, Srimad Bhakti Siddhan.
Were we not favored?
Were we not favored by His divine grace, Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, by our first meeting for a few minutes only, it would have been impossible for us to accept this mighty task of describing Srimad Bhagavatam in English. Without seeing Him at that opportune moment, we could have become a very great business magnate, but never could we have been able to walk the path of liberation and be engaged in the factual service of the Lord under instruction of His divine grace.
And here is another practical example by the action of Vidura's association with Dhritarashtra. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was tightly bound in a network of material affinities related to politics, economy, and family attachment, and he did everything in his power to achieve so-called success in his planned projects. But he was frustrated from the beginning to the end, so far as his material activities were concerned. And yet, despite his life of failure, he achieved the greatest of all success in self-realization by the forceful instructions of a pure devotee of the Lord, who is the typical emblem of a sadhu. The scriptures enjoin, therefore, that one should associate with sadhus only, rejecting all other kinds of association, and by doing so, one will have ample opportunity to hear the sadhus, who can cut to pieces the bonds of illusory affection in the material world. It is a fact that the material world is a great illusion because everything appears to be a tangible reality, but at the next moment evaporates like the dashing foam of the sea or a cloud in the sky. A cloud in the sky undoubtedly appears to be a reality because it rains, and due to rains, so many temporary green things appear. But in the ultimate issue, everything disappears, namely the cloud, rain, and green vegetation, all in due course. But the sky remains, and the very varieties of sky or luminaries also remain forever. Similarly, the absolute truth, which is compared to the sky, remains eternally, and the temporary cloud-like illusion comes and goes away. Foolish living beings are attracted by the temporary cloud, but intelligent men are more concerned with the eternal sky with all its variegatedness.
Good, thank you. Does anyone remember a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam talking about this fleeting and ephemeral nature of what appears to be so real? Maybe like the first verse, Srimad Bhagavatam, remember? Yes. Tejo Vari Mridam Yata Vinimayo Yatra Tri Sargom Risha. what appears to be solid is actually ethereal, and what appears to be ethereal is actually solid. This is the nature of the material world. So my spiritual life appears to be very ethereal, but it's actually really solid. And MSNBC or whatever, that appears to be solid reality. All right, let's read next. First, let's have the men read the purport on this one, because this is about the ladies. The ladies read the one about the men, so now the men can read the one about the ladies. Text 30. Actually, let's do the Sanskrit together, shall we? Patim prayantam subalasya putri pati vrata chanu jagama sadvi himalayam yasta danda praharsham manasvinam eva satsam prahara. Translation. The gentle and chaste Gandhari, who was the daughter of King Subal of Kandahar, or Gandahar, followed her husband, seeing that he was going to the Himalaya mountains, which are the delight of those who have accepted the staff of the renounced order, like fighters who have accepted a good lashing from the enemy. Purport, gentlemen.
Subalini, or Gandhari, daughter of King Subala and wife of King Dhritarashtra, was ideal as a wife devoted to her husband. The Vedic civilization especially prepares chaste and devoted wives, of whom Gandhari is one amongst many mentioned in history. Lakshmi Sita Devi was also a daughter of a great king, but she followed her husband, Lord Ramachandra, into the forest. Similarly, as a woman, Gandhari could have remained at home or at her father's house, but as a chaste and gentle lady, she followed her husband without consideration. Instructions for the renounced order of life were imparted to Dhritarashtra by Vidura, and Gandhari was by the side of her husband. But he did not ask her to follow him, because he was at that time fully determined, like a great warrior faces all kinds of dangers in the battlefield. He was no longer attracted to so-called wife or relatives, and he decided to start alone. But as a chaste lady, Gandhari decided to follow her husband till the last moment. Maharaj Dhritarashtra accepted the order of Vanaprastha, and at this stage the wife is allowed to remain as a voluntary servitor. But in the sannyas stage, no wife can stay with her former husband. A sannyasi is considered to be a dead man civilly, and therefore the wife becomes a civil widow without connection with her former husband. Maharaj Dhritarashtra did not deny his faithful wife, and she followed her husband at her own risk.
The sannyasis accept a rod as a sign of the renounced order of life. There are two types of sannyasis: those who follow the Mayavadi philosophy, headed by Sripad Sankaracharya, accept only one rod, Ekadanda. But those who follow the Vaishnavite philosophy accept three combined rods, three danda. The Mayavadi sannyasis are Ekadandi Swamis, whereas the Vaishnava sannyasis are known as Tridandi Swami, or more distinctly, Tridandi Goswamis, in order to be distinguished from the Mayavadi philosophers. The Ekdandi Swami are mostly fond of the Himalayas, but the Vaishnava sannyasis are fond of Vrindavan and Puri. The Vaishnava sannyasis are Narottams, whereas the Mayavadi sannyasis are Dhiras. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was advised to follow the Dhiras, because at that stage it was difficult for him to become a Narottam.
Suppose this story were in the National Enquirer. Relative takes elderly couple, blind couple, to the mountains for suicide pact. It'd be sensational. But the Bhagavatam is sharing with us these inner revelations of these great souls, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. This is the renunciation of Dhritarashtra. And if you recall from the Sad Aishwarya Purna, Krishna is full in six opulences, this statement. So what are these six opulences? Beauty, wealth, fame, strength, intelligence, and renunciation. So the first five, everybody can see very attractive. Wealth, beauty, fame, knowledge, strength. Everybody wants these things. But renunciation is, at least superficially, not so popular. And yet at the same time, in a certain way, renunciation is valued in our society. I'm thinking of one word that is right up there with awesome in the lexicon of modern America. If somebody's renounced, they're cool. Isn't that the meaning? Like, if somebody's all attached, that's a turnoff. But if somebody's like, yeah, whatever, man, that's cool. So, this is a little of the spirit of renunciation in the superficial way. But in a very deep way, Maharaj Dhritarashtra is having this revelation profoundly, deeply, and thoroughly. So after this long life, which has been full of failures and frustrations in many ways, and yet much of which he ruled the earth, he's saying, I'm leaving immediately. No forethought, no travel agent, no provisions made whatsoever, just walking out into the night, this disabled man. And just after hearing this conversation with his younger brother. So it's a very profound development in his life. So in terms of renunciation in our lives, who can distinguish between what are the characteristics of real renunciation as opposed to artificial renunciation? Since, especially for devotees, renunciation is a desirable thing. What are some contrasts between actual and artificial renunciation? Amrita Kaili?
Real renunciation is sustainable. Artificial renunciation is not.
Very good. Sustainable versus flickering. Okay. Chintaman?
A real renunciate is humble, and somebody who's just doing it to show off is not humble.
Okay. Yes, it's. Okay, good.
Real renunciation helps you make spiritual progress. Mm.
Okay, yes, as opposed to artificial renunciation, which is flickering. Good.
I feel like real renunciation is like whether something is there or not, whether there's abundance or there's a complete lack of things, externally, then one is not affected or disturbed. Whereas artificial renunciation might be like, you're constantly trying to renounce, but really internally you're still attached.
Mm-hmm.
Real renunciation, you're not attached whether it's there or whether it's not there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Clayton has a comment also.
What are real and false renunciation? False renunciation is just giving something up because you think that it can't be used in Krishna's service. Oh, I'm not going to take this money. I'm not going to take this car. I'm not going to take such and such a thing. And that's completely missing the point. It's thinking, well, I don't want to be selfish. So I'm not going to have it. But it's only going halfway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not realizing that, yes, it's not for your enjoyment. It's not for your pleasure. But you have to use it for Krishna's pleasure somehow.
Mm.
So if something's offered to you, and you might not think right away, oh, well, I don't know what I'm going to do with that. I mean, if it's offered to you by a devotee or something like that, then you should accept it. And even if it might not have a purpose right away, you should later on, if Krishna is giving that to you, then it's going to be used in his service eventually.
Very good. But yeah, these are two prominent themes from Bhagavad Gita about renunciation. Very good, these points that you brought up. In the second chapter, we find Vishaya Vinivartante Niraharasya Dehina Vasovarjam Rasopyasya Param Nrishva Nivartate. One may refrain, like Olivia was saying, one may refrain from sense objects, although the taste remains. See, so this is artificial renunciation. The taste is still there, but I'm renounced for the time being. But by experiencing a higher taste, one can be fixed in renunciation. So this is one important instruction. In other words, we can't be artificial if we're attached to something and we're just gritting our teeth and trying to stay away from it. That is not Krishna consciousness. You know, it is an attempt to be renounced. But if one has so much taste from bhakti, then the renunciation comes as a byproduct. So this is actual renunciation. So the emphasis is on the positive taste. Prabhupada called it the positive alternative to material life. Then in terms of Clayton's point also, the Gita talks about this using things or accepting things in Krishna's service. In the sixth chapter, the first verse, this is the chapter about yoga, mystic yoga. So Krishna begins his discussion with Arjuna by saying, anasritam karma palam, karyam karoti cha, sa sanyasi cha yogi cha na niragni na niskriya. That one who works as he is obliged without attachment to the fruits of that work is actually renounced, not one who agni, does not light a fire or niskriya, performs no work. That's right. I'll hang on for a minute. So this is the first thing, that renunciation does not mean stopping work. It means to work in a spirit of devotion. So this chapter 6 is just the introduction to that theme. It's elaborated on later in the Gita. But Krishna begins that discussion by just blasting Arjuna's concept of a renunciate, you know, as somebody who lives in a cave and just leaves the world. Then this other point about accepting things from Krishna's service. I believe you were paraphrasing, if not quoting this verse from the Nectar of Devotion. What is it? Anasuktasya vishayan yataraham upayunjata. If something can be used for Krishna's service, to renounce it is called palgu vairagya. Dry renunciation, right? After the Palgu River in India, which has sand on the surface, but there's water underneath. So on the surface, one may be renounced, but underneath there's so much attachment. So this is this is artificial renunciation. In a philosophical sense also, what can we renounce? Because what do we own? Prabhupada talked about a man who walks into the bank and says, I renounce all the money in this bank. And everyone laughs because everyone knows, this is not your money to renounce. Yes, but I'm detached from it. So to say, I renounce this world, but what is this world? You know, what do we really possess? Once a disciple said to Srila Prabhupada, we've given up so much to take up Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, what did you have to give up? So in this case, Dhritarashtra is giving up a very comfortable life in the palace. All his financial needs are met. He's also treated very respectfully by the king, by Yudhisthira, even though he has every reason to treat him otherwise, because Yudhisthira is so kind-hearted, soft-hearted. He's treating Dhritarashtra very respectfully, as we'll see in tomorrow's class, which is almost like a tearjerker when Yudhisthira discovers what has happened. So there is great comfort, security, and everything, but he's walking away from it. And Gandhari, in the next verse, is, although he is not asking her to come or even saying anything on the subject, he's totally cut off. You do whatever you want. I'm leaving. She, out of her chastity, follows him. And actually, she has, of course, her eyes blindfolded, so she would not be superior to her blind husband in any way. So both of them are sightless. So how do they get to the mountains? Yeah, Vidura takes them up. So without telling anyone, the three of them just leave at night. A very poignant scene. By the way, Gandhari, is mentioned in this verse, her father was a king of Kandahar. Anyone know where Kandahar is? Yes, Afghanistan. You might remember from the Coalition of the Willing or whatever, when the Allies invaded Afghanistan, that was one of the cities, Kandahar. So Gandhari was from this kingdom just north of India. So as they are leaving, this reminds us of the renunciation of many great personalities in our line. Sannyas means renunciation, the renounced order. Sa means with, and nyas means nothing. So sannyas, with nothing. Without any security, without any plans, one just, I'm leaving now and depending on God. And this is the stage that Dhritarashtra has abruptly reached. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and many others in our line took sannyas, and I'd like to talk about them for a few minutes, and then ask what is the difference between their sannyas, their renunciation, and Dhritarashtra's. So as far as Lord Chaitanya is concerned, he was a very learned teacher in his village, Navadvip, in the town, Navadvip, highly respected. And he was married also, twice. First wife died when he was absent, getting initiated, right, in Goa. And his second wife died, he decided to leave. He decided to leave and accept sannyas, although he was only 24 years old, because he was teaching in grammar and being criticized by his students. He was teaching them using a method of only using Krishna's names for their lessons. And as I recall, it's something to do with gopi. He was chanting gopi, 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 experiencing and expressing this Vipralamba Seva. And his students began criticizing him. So he was not affected by criticism. See? Sometimes when we're criticized by others, which everybody experiences, so when you're criticized, it can make you very upset. People will get really motivated just by a little praise and really upset just by a little criticism. You know? So in this case, when Lord Chaitanya was criticized, he was not affected, but he saw that these students were going to hell for criticizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in his social milieu, the respected order was sannyasi. So he accepted the sannyasi order right away so that people would offer him respect and thus make spiritual advancement. So he was not attached to any order. He said, I am not a sannyasi, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Shudra, I am not anything. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis, 1,000 times removed. Right? Gopi brahta padakamalayor, dasa dasa anudas. At the same time, though, for this purpose, he accepted the renounced order, and thus people made advancement and appreciated and respected him. It's a very, very tragic scene in the Chaitanya Bhagavat when Lord Chaitanya takes sannyas. Has anyone read that? You know, he's getting his head shaved, and the barber just refuses to do it. He can't tolerate shaving. No, no, your beautiful black hair, I can't do that. But somehow he's persuaded. And when Sachi Mata hears about it, she's heartbroken. And his wife, Vishnupriya, is just also stunned. All of his friends, everybody is just heartbroken. But he's very blissful. So he's not doing this to make everybody sorry. But he's showing us, because he's Krishna in the role of a devotee, that for the sake of devotional service, everything can be sacrificed. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's renunciation is very exemplary and very dramatic also, but also must be seen in the context of the society in which he was living. His immediate disciples were the six Goswamis, and they are also noted for their renunciation, particularly which one? Raghunath Das Goswami, yes. Raghunath was a very, very wealthy man whose parents tried everything to keep him engaged in the family business. And he kept sneaking out. So when he came to Jagannath Puri, he behaved in a most renounced fashion, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was quite pleased with him. But all of them were very renounced. They are described in the Sad Goswami Astikam by Srinivasacharya. Taktua Turnam Asesha Mandala Pati Srinim Sada Tuchavat. Tuchavat means insignificant. All of the Goswamis, to varying degrees, were very opulent, highly placed, powerful people. And they gave up all of that as insignificant. Taktua Turnam Asesha Mandala Pati Srinim Sada Tuchavat. Bhutva Dina Ganesh Ako Karunaya. Dina means what? Means the poor or the fallen. So for the sake of the fallen people, they put on kopans, which is just like the bare minimum clothing a person can wear. So this was their renunciation. But it was not for the sake of anything other than the fallen conditioned souls. Because of their compassion for this, the conditioned souls, they gave up all of their opulence. So this was the Goswamis, and they established all of these temples and wrote all of these books and laid the basis for our whole Krishna consciousness movement. Then we read about Srila Prabhupada's renunciation. And it's wonderfully recorded in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. So he was, this is famously known, that his wife was not so interested in his preaching spirit, right? So she would hold tea parties in one room of the house while he was holding Bhagavad Gita classes in the other and refused to attend. And finally, at one point, she traded his Srimad Bhagavatam for tea biscuits. And that was the last straw. So that's the part we usually hear about. But underlying that, we have to see that Prabhupada was in Jhansi, this relatively small city, and had found an interested audience there and a nice building, and was seeing for the first time a chance to practically begin teaching, spreading Krishna consciousness. So he decided to found this international league of devotees there in this dusty town of Jhansi, and he was very excited about the prospects. But in order to buy the building, he had to go and make money. So the only way he knew how to make money was what? Selling drugs, right? Pharmaceutical business. So this is when this final exchange took place with his family, and he left. So I just wanted to share with you, my friend Abhiram Prabhu was Prabhupada's nurse at the end of his life, his manifest pastimes. And he told me about a conversation he had with Prabhupada that Prabhupada said, actually, he said, I could not have asked for a better wife. Remember when he was first married, Prabhupada did not want, he was not satisfied with this particular wife. He wanted to marry another one as well, which was socially acceptable. But his father said, you'll be sorry, don't do that. So he didn't. But Prabhupada said this that in a very compassionate way, that his wife was actually very nice. She gets kind of a bad name, and that's why I wanted to share that story with you. I couldn't have asked for a better wife, he said. And then he arranged, even as a renunciate, that when, that she would have a pension, she would be cared for, even though he never saw her again. So this renunciation Srila Prabhupada showed is the same degree of gravity and thoroughness as Dhritarashtra. He left home and he never came back. And he told them basically, now, whatever I've built up, whatever I have, it's yours. You do what you like with it. His son came to see him in Jhansi and tried to persuade him, please come back and just take care of the family business. And he refused. So his son stayed with him for a little while and then returned. So this is the story of Prabhupada's renunciation. How many here have read Radhanath Maharaj's book, A Journey Home? Most everybody? Okay. So I won't go in detail, but of course that's the story of a young man who made a determined vow he was going to understand God, and went to all kinds of religious places and experiences before finding his ultimate realization. So this is also a nice story of renunciation, where he, to a very dramatic degree, left everything and pursued his spiritual quest. I believe at the end of the book, if you recall, he returned back when he was back in America, and he was now a monk, and he was, and his family kind of understood that and gave him his space. He was staying out on the balcony of their apartment in Miami or something like that. A funny story. I don't know if this made the book or not, but he was going to the ISKCON temple in Miami, and the devotee said, "Prabhupada's in New York. Yeah, would you like to go?" And he said, "Yes." And so then the next day they said, "Oh, we decided not to go." So he went out and hitchhiked all the way up there, great difficulty and all kinds of life risking adventures. And then he finally made his way to the front steps of the brownstone temple there on Henry Street, and the van from Miami pulled up. They changed their mind again. So no. So that same theme in each case, you see this thoroughness of renunciation. That's a common theme through all of these experiences. Anyone like to share an experience of their own internal adventure with renunciation? Anyone come to a point in their lives where they said, "I'm just giving this up, for I want to find out about spiritual life"? Anybody?
I just remember one time before I went on a trip to Europe. This was years ago, and I remember we were packing for it, and I also at the time had been really involved with or attached to somebody, you know, like in my heart, you know, like this thing, and that kind of broke off. So it was really like a feeling of almost preparing for another life. It was so strange. Like, we were packing, me and my sister were packing, we were just thinking about how that would be to kind of, you know, kind of resolve everything in this life and then move on for, you know, because we were going for months to Europe, and it just felt like such a break, you know. It was actually kind of nice. It felt good.
Drop the load and hit the road. Okay. Anyone else? Brandon, can you get a mic?
Pretty much done a lot of the renunciation for me. I used to be in a band. I used to have a girlfriend that I saw for a while, and I used to have a job, not a very good job, and a few not a very good jobs, and I was, you know, and all mixed up in a bunch of stuff, you know, experimentation. Bit by bit, piece by piece, it seemed like it just kept falling, like this old skin just kept falling off, you know, like just this stuff that wasn't good for me. Like, you know, I thought it was bad. I thought I was like, "Oh, this is detrimental" at the time. And I thought, I was like, you know, they say God's a potter and he's like molding you, and sometimes you're like, he's like hitting you in one area, you're like, "Ah, why?" You know? But he's really trying to make you into a masterpiece in your own way. And so I went through all these changes within the past 2 years, and I don't have many belongings.
How's it feel?
It feels great. I think I could go with less. But it feels great you know, I had all these things on my mind at that point. Now I just know that what the ultimate goal is.
Well, both of you are describing kind of a gradual and in a sense, partial renunciation, which is more common and practical and typical. They were reading about it and talking about all these great personalities, and they're just cutting their connections immediately. In Dhritarashtra's case, it was stimulated by, as Prabhupada writes about, a brief association with a saintly person. So that's very crucial. Saintly person is called a sadhu, and one of the meanings of sadhu is one who can cut. So that person can help us cut our attachments to the material world by giving us, not by just telling us how horrible it is, but by giving us a higher alternative.
Actually, that reminded me of meeting a sadhu. When we were in New Vrindavan last year, we were with Radhanath Maharaj, and we were introducing everyone. He said, this is Shruti Sagar. He'll also be a big landowner one day, because Radhanath Maharaj had met some landowner somewhere in the airport, so he said, he'll be a big landowner one day. Radhanath Maharaj looked at me and said, we can never own the land. It's never. And I was like, okay, what am I supposed to say? I said, I'll give it to ISKCON Maharaj. He said, land is never yours. He said, you are just the trustee. Huh. And Krishna is the proprietor, is just trusted to you. So it was interesting, because like when we meet Radhanath Maharaj, it's so short and so quick, you know. It was so funny that he said that to me, and I really took that to heart, because it applies not just for land but for everything else. Huh. It's just like, we just trust you. So it was, I can see how this one moment association with the sadhu can help us be more enhanced.
Very good. Now these things are all related to this last paragraph that we read about, the difference between a dhira and a narottama. Who can say what is the difference between a dhira and a narottama? We read that Maharaj Dhritarashtra was only ready to become a dhira, and he was not ready to become a narottama. So in terms of renunciation, how could you characterize the difference between the two? Clayton, let me toss the mic down there.
Well, dhira just means like sober or fixed in knowledge, self-realized in that. He understands the impermanence of material life. And basically, he's just situated in the impersonal aspect of truth. Whereas narottama, I'm pretty sure nara means man, right? Mm-hmm. And uttama means great or highest.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So narottama means that one has reached the highest stage of his life and he's fully realized the absolute truth, such as the Vaishnava Tridandi Goswamis.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was no way ready for that.
Well, consider, yes, that's true, but what specifically is the difference? Consider the renunciation of Lord Chaitanya, the Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, and
the renunciation for the narottamas is a byproduct, really. It's not something they strive for, it's something that just comes along with the bhakti yoga.
Mm-hmm.
That they're practicing.
And how is it? That's very good. Yes, exactly. Dhritarashtra was not ready, as we'll read about later. He was not ready for bhakti yoga.
Right. He was only at the stage of absorbing himself in Brahman,
mm-hmm.
and realizing the all-pervading aspect of the Lord and everything around him.
That's correct. That's the Mayavadi mantra, right? Jagat Mityam. Brahma Satyam. Everything is false, only Brahman is real. So practically then, what is the difference between Dhritarashtra's renunciation and the renunciation of Lord Chaitanya and Zixi Goswami? Preach. Yes, they're, in other words, Dhritarashtra is leaving society, whereas all of these other great personalities renounced in order to interact with society in a new way, for the sake of Krishna's service.
Okay. One of them is done out of love, and the other one's done out of fear.
Yes.
So like fear-based, like, I'm getting old, I better quickly do something about
yes.
it. The other one's like love for Krishna.
Yes. Like Lord Chaitanya said, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam ba jagadisha kamaye, mama janmani, janmani ishwari, bhavatad bhakti rahaitaki tvayi. I have no desire for the opposite sex. I have no desire for fame or for money. All I want is your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. Meaning, I'm not afraid to just stay in the material world if that's where you want me to serve.
Where does the renunciation?
Right.
Like I was trying to think of an example of like renunciation in my life, but I couldn't think of anything that I felt like I felt like I renounced something, you know. Mm. But we obviously have renounced things, but not because I felt the need to renounce them, just because it felt natural. So how does that come into play with what like Shinta just said, you know, like one's out of fear and the other one's out of love, and then the other one's just like, oh, okay, this feels right. You know? So like, where's that like?
Right. Do you remember this verse from the second chapter? Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yasu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayara Haitikam. By rendering devotional service to the personality of Godhead, causeless knowledge and detachment from this world result. So it's a causeless effect of a byproduct, like we've been saying. So practically, if we take up Krishna consciousness, then we automatically become detached from things that used to be really meaningful to us. One of the most dramatic is friends and relationships. In ordinary life, these are the paramount. Friendship, society, and love. That's what it's all about. You know, that's what makes people get up in the morning and stimulates them. But in Krishna consciousness, we also have friends, we have family, we have society, but it's secondary to our relationship with Krishna. And then we like to associate with people who are Krishna conscious. So our friendships gradually shift. I remember when I was becoming a devotee, one of my former friends said, "You stand for everything I hate," and rode off on his motorcycle. So it has that effect automatically, causelessly. It's not something to be proud of. It's not something to pursue of its own accord. It is something that happens if our purpose is serving Krishna. That makes sense? And yes, we have renounced a lot more than, you know, meets the eye. To live in the association of devotees is a huge renunciation. You know? He said it drives her crazy. So, yes. Yes. But not as crazy. At least now you know you're crazy. Let's put it that way. In conclusion, this is the difference between a dhira and a narottama. This is the difference between the purposeful, deliberate renunciation for one's own aggrandizement or out of fear, as Jantamani pointed out, or renunciation that happens because one is driven by a different purpose. I want to please Krishna. And it doesn't mean a change externally. This is the point I wanted to conclude with. In Dhritarashtra's case, it did. In Lord Chaitanya's case, it did. The Goswami's case, it did. In Srila Prabhupada's, less so, but also. But for us, we don't have to start with this stark renunciation. If we just start by asking Krishna for devotional service and pursuing that service, the renunciation comes of its own accord. And the more that we are fortunate to have a taste for that service, the more the detachment will be there automatically. So knowledge and detachment are footholds in bhakti. They are useful for getting started if one's not too attached, or if one is not too burdened by so many mental ideas about spiritual life. Then one can proceed in bhakti. The purpose of bhakti is not renunciation or knowledge. They come by of their own accord. Chaitanya Prabhu.
I was thinking of what Amrita had said about renunciation and what's sustainable. Hmm. And in my own life, I know that there's been times that I've thought, okay, I don't want this. I got to get this out of my life. Maybe not have had a higher taste, but did it I'm going to do this because I know it's going to help me in my devotional life. But the thing is if you don't have a higher taste, mm-hmm. even if you give up something, then the desire will come again, and then you'll have to, like, I don't know, for women, we like bangles and jewelry. and saris and things like that. So one, it's different times in my life. I just give it away, give it away, give it away. You know, I'm just not, I'm done with it. And then it would come back to me again and again. You know, and that, give it away, give it away, give it away. And then it come back, come back. And it seemed like more would come back even. And then I would be like, you know, especially in household things, I had taken care of people and had. When I left Hawaii and became devotee, I had all of this opulence, and I thought, oh, give it away. And then I come to America, I mean the mainland, and then I get a whole house of household goods given to me. And then we'd go on a you know, transition of preaching and traveling, give it away. Then come back, and then a whole nother house was given to us. And it was just like, I realized it was about utilizing it in Krishna's service.
Yeah, that's
and
actually.
Then I became gradually more detached in a way in which it was sustainable, you know, that it wasn't that I was mentally, oh, no, I don't want this, you know. But, like, really, it, like Prabhupada, there was one story. This one gentleman said, I don't want to touch money. And Prabhupada said, that is all right. You can give it to me because I'll spend it all for Krishna. So now instead of just falsely seeing things as like, oh, I'm adverse to it, because that's the opposite side of the same coin, attachment.
Yes.
So I really appreciated what you said. It made me think of real renunciation in my life.
Good point. What is, you remember in the 18th chapter, what's the title of the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Perfection of renunciation, right? So Krishna starts out by describing the renunciation in the three modes. And how is it characterized briefly? Anyone can say? Renunciation in the mode of ignorance is based basically on what? Laziness, illusion. Yep. And then... Because it's troublesome, yes. And this is reminds me of what you were talking about, that kind of idea of renunciation. I'm going to give it away and make my life simpler. I'm going to quote the great Vaishnava poet Akendra Das Prabhu in his song, The Mode of Passion. The mode of passion wouldn't leave me alone, so I gave away everything that I owned. Next day I went to get it all back, and everybody told me, tough luck, Jack.